You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
R.I.P. Wesley Johnson's ankles. On that note, welcome into another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we chat early on this Thursday morning, the Rockets are just a few hours removed from the latest win in their now ongoing 14-game win streak, a 105-92 triumph in Los Angeles over the Clippers on Wednesday evening, a strange game in which the Rockets got up 27 points in essentially one quarter, then coasted the rest of the way. But the bottom line is the Rockets got the win against a possible playoff team, the Clippers 32-27, certainly not to the Rockets' lofty standards of 48-13 and number one in the entire NBA, but the Clippers are a team that could very easily make the playoffs. As we've discussed in prior episodes of the show, they could easily play the Rockets as the 2-7 or the 1-8 in the first round, and they had been, even though there were some extenuating circumstances, 2-0 against the Rockets in prior matchups this season. So for the Rockets to get the win, it was a very unorthodox game. I don't think there's a ton to take out of it because of the unique nature in which it unfolded. But in general, it was a significant win for the Rockets to get one of that magnitude on the road at Staples Center. And certainly it was a statement game after what happened the last time these two teams played there, which led to the, quote, secret tunnel and all the post-game altercations that eventually led to Trevor Ariza and Gerald Green getting two-game suspensions. Now, the story of the game, of course, was that first quarter. The Rockets got out to a 31-7 start, eventually 39-12, and it was punctuated by a three that made it 31-7 by James Johnson, a nasty crossover and step back on Wesley Johnson, who fell to the floor. Harden stared at him for a few moments afterward. You could clearly see that this was, as we said, a statement game for James. He drilled the three. James in the game finished with 25 points, 7 assists, 50% shooting, which is certainly a strong outing, but of his 25 points, 17 came in the first quarter. So in terms of his contributions, I think you could see the Rockets, they circled this on their calendar, whatever you want to call it. This was a major game for them to prove a point, and they came out with just a furious opening kick on both ends of the floor. When you start off 31-7, 39-12, it's not just a matter you got hot from the perimeter. They were locked in defensively as well, and James Harden was a key part of it on both ends of the floor, and that's why, even though he was not really there to his usual extent over the final three quarters, his first quarter was strong enough that, folks, he got 25-7, in which he only really played hard for about 10 to 12 minutes of the game. And that's important because the Rockets, I'm not going to say it was never stressful. The Clippers did close it to 8 at one point late in the third quarter, although the Rockets were able to push it back to 18, eventually won by 13. But it's nice to get a non-stressful win because for the Rockets, we've mentioned in the past, out of the All-Star break, this 8-game hell stretch in which they're now 4-0. Well, folks, it's not just the opponents you're playing. Now, all of them are winning teams. Next up is Boston on Saturday night, the ABC primetime game. Fortunately, that one's in Houston. But also logistics. The game Wednesday night, that was the end of a 4-game-in-6-night stretch. It was also the end of a 3-game-in-4-night stretch. All of those three on the road and two of them at altitude. So I do think there were some tired legs for the Rockets. And even if it got ultimately a little bit closer than maybe you would have wanted, I think you can look at it as either a half glass half empty or a glass half full thing. If you want to look at it as glass half empty, you can point out that, yes, the Rockets got out to a big lead, and then they didn't ultimately win in blowout fashion. They let the Clippers at least sort of come back and make it a game, and championship teams shouldn't do that. The flip side, if you want to look at it as glass half full, the Rockets knew they were tired, and so if you're tired, the best thing you could do is get a lead so you can play in front, which they did. And in addition to playing from in front, when the Clippers actually did hit them with a run, the Rockets didn't get rattled. They were just calmly able to move it back from, as we said, as close as 8 all the way up to 15 and eventually got it back up to 18 at one point in the fourth quarter. Actually, I take it back. I'm looking at the game log now. The Rockets actually got it up to 20 before the Clippers went on a largely cosmetic 7-0 run over the final 2 minutes and 20 seconds to get the final score from 20 all the way back down to 13. And I tend to lean more towards the glass half full side in this situation, because when you look at the lapses, and certainly it started defensively after the Rockets got that 27-point lead, in which they were just dominant on both ends, led by James Harden offensively, really contributions across the board defensively. I thought Trevor Ariza was active. I thought Clint Capella, who finished with 22 and 14, was stunningly good in his first game back after missing time with illness. Really up and down the roster, you had contribution on the defensive end. Then what happened after that first quarter, and you got out to that 39-12 lead, you had slippage on multiple fronts. I thought defensively in the second quarter, you started seeing Montrezl Harrell allowed to get far too deep position in the paint. They also didn't double. You also started seeing guys go under the screens against guards such as Teodosic. And before you knew it, the Clippers were able to get this down to below 20 at the half and get some juice back in that gym that was just stunned by the early onslaught that the Rockets went on both ends of the court. And, you know, I'm not going to say that the concerns about letting the Clippers get back to 8 are unwarranted. But first, the Clippers are a good team. The Clippers, the night before, were down 18 late in the third quarter in Denver and came back to win the game against a very likely playoff-bound Nuggets squad. The Clippers are good. They have talent. Give them some credit. But secondly, for the Rockets, as we mentioned, 4 games in 6 nights, 3-4, all on the road. There were some tired legs. I don't know if it was really reasonable on the road to expect the Rockets to dominate over all 48 minutes. There were going to be some stretches in which you had to conserve some legs, especially for the guys that went all out to get that win Monday night in Utah, keep the streak going. And ultimately, the lapses came, as we mentioned, defensively in the second quarter, then the third quarter, rather than probe. I think we saw James Harden get a little careless and lazy with his passes. Far too many turnovers. Rockets of the game only had 10, but 4 of them came from James Harden, I believe, all after the first quarter. So a lot of that, in my opinion, can be traced back to maybe him not having the energy, the lift to probe, to go right to the rim the way he did early in the game. But there were always going to be stretches like that. That's why I tend to believe more of that glass half full side, because when you look at the glass half empty case, I just don't know how reasonable it is to just dominate a game like this on the road with all the tired legs in the middle of this 8-game hell stretch, the scheduling difficulties, all those types of things. Really, I think it's pretty understandable why the Rockets would not be locked in for 48 minutes. The bottom line is the Rockets were able to get the win because they were so dominant in the first quarter, and then when the Clippers did answer the bell and eventually got it to as close as 8 late in the third quarter, the Rockets didn't get rattled, even with a gem that had come very much back to life. They just calmly responded, got the lead back out to double digits, then to 15, and then ultimately to 20 again. So when you consider the extenuating circumstances, the schedule at which they've played, I don't really buy in to the pessimism, because there are just certain logistics in this case. And it's not like the Rockets were even at full strength either. I think you certainly could have used Ryan Anderson off the bench in this game. He was not available with the hip flexor. Also did not have Brandon Wright. This felt probably like a series in which you could use Brandon Wright more than Nene based on the athleticism of the Clippers, the lineups they threw out there with even Montrezl Harrell at the 5. But Wright's still out with the knee. Ryan Anderson still out with the hip flexor. So it's still a shorthanded Rockets team. Now, a shorthanded Rockets is still remarkably deep. Hat tip to Daryl Morey. But with this stretch they're having to navigate now, I don't know how reasonable it is to just dominate all 48 minutes. I think you need to see them dominate stretches, and really I think the most important stretch when you're a little tired and at the end of a gauntlet like this is early in the game, so you play in front rather than from behind so that the minutes are not as stressful. They did that and then some with an incredible 39-12 start punctuated by that filthy James Harden crossover that sent Wesley Johnson to the deck. And then when the other team makes a run, do you get rattled? The answer, they did not. The Rockets just very calmly, after the Clippers got it to 8, and it seemed like, here we go. Well, the Rockets just very calmly, they made their plays. We mentioned Clint Capella's 22-14. Eric Gordon, in his first game back after missing 3 with the Nuggets, also had 22 points. We'll talk about both Clint and Eric in just a moment in the second segment of our 3 points recap. But even with James Harden limited, as we said, 17 points in the first, then just only 8 the rest of the game. Even with Chris Paul, only 6 points on 3 of 12 shooting from the field, the Rockets still went out and won by 13 points. Really, won by 20, if not for the cosmetic 7-0 run at the end, on the road against a team that had beaten them twice before. And, by the way, one last thing before we move on to further player breakdowns. I do want to touch on the Clippers as a playoff opponent, because I've talked about that in the past, that they're at the top of my list for teams I would want to play in the playoffs, and I know a lot of fans were nervous about that. I saw some after the Clippers comeback in Denver that were having memes about how they did not want the Clippers, despite my recommendation. And while I'm not going to say I told you so based on one game, I will say that what happened Wednesday night, in my opinion, is evidence of why I think the Clippers would struggle in a playoff series against the Rockets. You look at the two wins. Yes, they're still 2-1 against the Rockets this year. Well, the two wins, the first came without Chris Paul, Clint Capella, and Luke Bamute. The second came without James Harden, the league's MVP frontrunner, and Nene. So the Rockets were very shorthanded in both. The second came with Blake Griffin as by far the best player, 29, 10, and 6. Say what you will about Blake, but his talent, especially when he is fully engaged, is still tremendous. I think also the first game, as Adam Clanton always reminds me, was the ridiculous display in which Austin Rivers had 36 points. The point is, there's a lot of factors in those prior two Clippers games that are fairly flukish and unlikely to be repeated. The bottom line, when you're comparing these two teams, especially without Blake Griffin, I would say the closest thing to a consistent difference maker the Clippers have would be, would be Lou Williams. Maybe DeAndre Jordan when you factor in defensive contributions, but in terms of who's going to run the offense, certainly that's not going to be DeAndre. Lou Williams is about the closest thing to a star they have. And folks, he's not even in the same league as James Harden, Chris Paul, the types of alpha dogs that the Rockets have. So the Clippers have a lot of nice pieces, but in terms of high-end consistency, folks, they can't touch the Rockets. That's why, to me, when you look at playoff matchups, even at the bottom of the West, there are a lot of really good players on these teams. Certainly Anthony Davis on the Pelicans, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum on the Blazers, Nikola Jokic, we saw him the other night with the Nuggets. There's a lot of upper-tier talent that can take over an individual game and make you sweat. I don't see that on the Clippers. Maybe from time to time you see that with Lou, but I'm skeptical as to whether his percentages this year are truly sustainable. I think we've seen in the past, too, he doesn't exactly have the greatest playoff pedigree either. So the Clippers are a very nice team, but to me, they're kind of the epitome of a regular season team. You have a lot of depth. You have a lot of nice pieces. There were 82 games. These guys are going to have their moments. But in the playoffs, when you have more time off in between games, more emphasis in which everyone is dialed in for the betterment of each 48-minute game, I just don't see the high-end talent on the Clippers that can compete with the Rockets. That's why, ultimately, I feel like this is a favorable matchup for Houston, even though they're just 1-2 against the Clippers this season. The one way you might could have convinced me about the Clippers being a tough matchup is if Blake Griffin was still there, because I'm not really sure who the matchup would have been for the Rockets. Maybe P.J. Tucker, because he's physical, but he is a little bit undersized. But, well, you don't have to worry about that. And it's not that the Clippers got nothing for him. Again, Tobias Harris had 24 points Wednesday. He's a decent piece. Avery Bradley did not play, but he can be a quality player offensively and a decent one defensively as well. But there's an absence of true upper echelon difference makers, elite players, whatever you want to call it. And that's why, in my opinion, the Clippers 105-92 losers on Wednesday night, it would not bother me at all to see them on the other side of the Rockets in the first round in the 1-8 or 2-7 series. Now, jumping back into the program, we were just talking about upper echelon talents, difference makers, why the Rockets, in my opinion, are such a favorable matchup against the Clippers, even more so than any other team at the bottom of the Western Conference playoff picture that the Rockets could play in the first couple of rounds. And besides the obvious of James Harden and Chris Paul, the Rockets also have two other players who are fringe all-star level talents at times, especially when they're connecting on their shots, and those would be Clint Capella and Eric Gordon. Now, Clint Capella has been there for the better part of this season. Eric Gordon, he's been a bit more streaky. But both of those guys, I've written in the past columns, and I still think they're largely true today, this whole idea that the Rockets can't compete with the Warriors is based on the idea of four All-Stars, two MVP candidates for the Warriors, but only two for the Rockets. But at the same time, if you're the Rockets, it's not like you don't have guys that are capable of stepping up and elevating their games through internal growth. And the two guys on your roster that are most capable of taking the next step, so to speak, especially in a playoff setting, would be Clint Capella and Eric Gordon. And the Rockets have so much depth that recently, when those guys have missed time, Clint one game due to a bad sore throat, Eric three games due to food poisoning that cost him 10 pounds, the Rockets did not even lose a game in that stretch. But nonetheless, big picture, these two guys are as important as it gets for the Rockets in the playoffs. They are your variables. To beat the Warriors four times out of seven, you probably need Eric Gordon to rival Klay Thompson in terms of his overall impact. You need Clint Capella to do things that Draymond Green does. Not saying he's going to be the same player, because certainly Clint's bigger, Draymond's a better passer, they don't exactly have the same skill sets. But I'm talking about overall level of impact on a game. And Karthik Prasad, you know, I have a Stanford KP on Twitter, we've had him on the show a few times this year, right after the All-Star break, he posted those charts, I retweeted them, about the overall impact of the Rockets' top five versus the Warriors' top five, comparing Clint to Draymond, Eric to Klay, Luke Bamute to Andre Iguodala, and the point that he was trying to make was that the Rockets' top five, when you actually look at the underlying numbers, net rating, is actually pretty close. But certainly the Warriors, the reason you give them the edge, if you had to when comparing these top five, is that, well, the Warriors' five, and especially the top four, have proven it in a playoff setting. They are more known commodities to where even if you see the numbers are fairly similar over 82 games, you have a good idea that those Warriors guys are going to round into form at the right time, and you have a better idea of the consistency, the level of play that they're going to give you in the postseason. So it's important down the home stretch of the year for the Rockets. Of course, James Harden and Chris Paul need to stay healthy and do what they do. But beyond that, you want to see your role players, and of your role players, I would say Clint and Eric are your two most important because they're high upside. You want to see them step up and head into the playoffs as close to clicking on all cylinders as you can. And so after seeing them miss a few games, it's fair to wonder how are they going to bounce back, especially because coming off, in Clint's case, a bad sore throat, sounds like a cold, Eric coming off the food poison. It'd be understandable if they're not all the way back, Eric with conditioning, Clint with just, well, everybody knows how it feels like, how it feels when you have a cold. And it's fair to say that one or both of those guys might not be all the way back. Well, fortunately for the Rockets, they were. Clint Capella, 22 and 14 against DeAndre Jordan, plus 14. Folks, he out-rebounded DeAndre. DeAndre did have 16 boards. But DeAndre, 4 points, 16 boards, minus 18 in his 30 minutes. Clint Capella, 22 points, 14 rebounds, 8 on offense, and plus 14 in his 33 minutes. Remember all the conversations that some had, myself included, about maybe having to trade down the line? I never supported it this year, but I said maybe down the line, depending on the results in the playoffs, make a move of Clint for DeAndre. Well, folks, it seems like Clint remembered those conversations, and not only did he hold his own against DeAndre Jordan, one of the best big men in the league, especially from a defensive perspective, he thoroughly outplayed him on both ends of the court, in my opinion. Clint plus 14, DeAndre minus 18, and that's something that you didn't see a year ago. We know what happened to Clint Capella in the majority of the Oklahoma City series against Steven Adams. You want to see Clint not just step up in matchups that are favorable for him and show you his athletic gifts, but you want to see the level of toughness, of physicality that was not always there in his first three seasons. And boy, did he step up in an enormous situation for the Rockets tonight. And even as glamorous as it was early, in a game that's going to be remembered for the James Harden crossover, the reality, things got a little bit hairy. It's not like the Rockets really shot that well. They were 42% from the field, just 30% from three, 13 of 43. James Harden had 25 points, but 17 came in the first quarter. Chris Paul had just 8 points on 3 of 12 shooting. So it's not as if the Rockets just took over a game with offense. They had to grind. They had to get stops defensively. They had to score at the rim. This was not a game in which the Rockets won with style points after the first quarter. And when that's the case, you need Clint Capella to play a huge role because he is by far your best chance at getting easier buckets and, of course, how he can finish around the rim, get offensive rebounds. And on a night where the Rockets, it's probably the tired legs from, as we said, 4 games in 6 nights, 3 and 4 all on the road, 2 at high altitude. You needed Clint Capella to play. You needed the athleticism against DeAndre Jordan. Well, he stepped up and did that. And then beyond just having a presence on the court, he actually was your leading difference maker. 14 rebounds, far and away led the team, 22 points, second only to James Harden. And again, doing all of this under the weather, playing against arguably the best defensive center in the league in DeAndre Jordan. So tip your hat to Clint. I know he only missed one game, but in addition to one game, you could tell he wasn't really himself on Sunday against Nikola Jokic. 6 points, 7 rebounds, minus 10 in his 27 minutes, 6 turnovers. And we all understood that he was sick, but at the same time, that's one of those mano-on-mano matchups in which you wonder, is this what's happened to Clint in the past in some of these games against the more physical bigs in the league? And so on paper, it's a different season. We all know how quality Clint has been this year. Now almost 15 points and over 11 rebounds per game. And no one's going to panic over one game against Nikola Jokic, especially because the Rockets won it anyway. But then to see him bounce back, even while still a little bit under the weather, and to have 22-14, that kind of showing against DeAndre Jordan, that is what makes you buy in on Clint Capela to an extent that you never did, even a year ago when he was showing you signs and by and large was still an above-average starting center in the league. He's making the leap from just an above-average starting center, which he was last year, to a true upper-tier starting center this year. And while James Harden's going to get a lot of the credit for being the MVP frontrunner, and deservedly so, it's the step forward from Clint Capela that's as big a role as any in terms of the Rockets exceeding their preseason expectations and being right there with the Warriors, actually a game up now as we go down the home stretch of the year, only 21 games left in the race for number one in the Western Conference and the entire NBA. The other difference maker, of course, was Eric Gordon, and he tied Capela with 22 points, 7 of 18 from the field, 5 of 14 from 3. Efficiency still a hair below where you would want it, although for Eric, we know the type of shooting slump he's been in his overall season average, nearly 33% now. 5 of 14 is almost 36%. So while it's not great, it is a step in the right direction, and more than anything, I think it's great. His situation with illness was a little different than Clint's. It's not like he passed the bug to Clint because Clint's was just typical cold. Eric was food poisoning. He lost 10 pounds. And so when you lose 10 pounds in basically a week, boy, that's something, it takes a toll, not just on how you feel in the short term, but on your conditioning, what it takes to be out there. So to see Eric Gordon not really do that much in terms of working out for a week and go out there and play 28 minutes, score 22 points off the bench, that's big. And even though he was only a plus one, at the same time, when you watch the game, Eric made threes at key inflection points. He made threes, it seemed like every time the Clippers got it down to 10, 12, make it where the Rockets might have to sweat just a little bit, Eric had the answer for that. And that's so big because not all shots, not all plus minuses are created equal. There are going to be some stretches in games that are more important. And when the Rockets really needed something, it felt like Eric was there. Also, he was a pretty quality player at creating off the dribble. He was only 2 of 4 inside the arc, but he had nice lift on those, got to the rim, and those were a big part in the Rockets getting some energy buckets in the second half when it seemed like the legs up and down the roster, especially James Harden and Chris Paul, probably a little bit tired from the heavy lifting they've been doing on this 3-game and 4-night stretch all on the road. Now, I'm not going to pretend that everything is all clear because Eric, it's just one game, and 7 of 18 from the field, 5 of 14 from 3. Well, that's okay. It's certainly not peak Eric Gordon efficiency. It's not all the way back to where you would want him. But after not playing for a week, after going through food poisoning that cost him 10 pounds, you will absolutely take 22 points in 28 minutes, especially because, again, we mentioned this hard legs up and down the roster. Well, because of that, your two guys that entered Wednesday night that were the most fresh were Clint Capela and Eric Gordon, so you probably needed to lean on them a little bit more to offset the Herculean effort that most of these guys had to expend to get that 96-85 win in Utah on Monday night, which required maximum effort on both ends of the court. And fortunately for the Rockets, it's been the epitome of team success all year. And if there were some tired legs from, the 7 or 8 players that were in the rotation both Monday night in Utah and Wednesday night in Los Angeles, the two that weren't, Clint Capela and Eric Gordon, even coming off illness situations, you still needed to lean on them a little more, and fortunately they were able both to pick it up and then some. Still a ways to go, especially for Eric Gordon, who's been in a deeper slump than Clint, certainly, and 7 of 18, 5 of 14, again, nothing jaw-dropping, but I do think it's a step in the right direction. Now, you get a couple of days off, don't play today, don't play tomorrow, not back in action until Saturday night at Toyota Center, that's the ABC primetime game against the Celtics, and hopefully then you have a much fresher team, and then any ill effects for Clint or Eric are hopefully gone, and it's amazing what home cooking and sleeping in your own bed can do on that front as well. Now, to close out the show, I want to talk about a couple of themes. First, Chris Paul. Yes, I've seen the tweets talking about his percentages after the All-Star break. And let's be real. 5 of 11, 6 of 14, 5 of 13, 3 of 12. Where you can really see the struggles for Chris. 0 of 5 from 3, 2 of 7 from 3, 1 of 4, and 1 of 5. add those up, and over his last four games, the four that the Rockets have all won since the All-Star break, Chris Paul is 4 of 12 from 3 for a very cold 19%. Now, this is a very small sample. And more important than that, the Rockets have won all the games. It's not like the Rockets have needed him and haven't gotten it. So I don't think anyone is overly worried about it now. And you can find any great shooter. They're going to have a 3 or 4 game stretch where they struggle. And the odds are that's what this is. The only reason that I worry about it a little bit is because the Wednesday before the All-Star break, we saw the hand injury that he suffered against the Kings when he left the game early and the locker room was actually shaking hands with his left instead of his right. They said it wasn't a big deal, that it was just a bruise, and I certainly have not seen him icing it. I haven't seen him holding it. I have not seen anything that makes you suspect that Chris Paul is limited in any way, and he may not be. He did have 9 days off. The only reason I wonder is because the first four games after that hand issue to his shooting hand, then the percentages have dipped dramatically. I can't prove it, and I'm certainly not saying that it's something that I've noticed. I'm just saying that, in my opinion, I would file it away in your memory bank. I don't see any reason at this point to be overly concerned. Again, I haven't noticed him icing it. I haven't noticed him not wanting to use it, and he did have 9 days off. So I'm not trying to sound the panic bell. The odds are, and I'm very aware of this, that Chris Paul shooting 19% from three over four games is probably just a random stretch that happens to anybody, even good shooters, over an 82-game season. However, when it comes to the first four games, after an injury to a shooting hand, you have to at least be open to the possibility. Now, I don't think it's any catastrophic injury. Certainly, he's playing through it, and Wednesday against the Clippers, boy, to show you the value of Chris Paul, in 29 minutes, even though he shot just 3 of 12 from the field, had just 8 points at the same time, had 8 assists, and was a team best plus 21 in his 29 minutes. He's a difference maker defensively. He got the ball to the shooters around him. It's not like Chris Paul is not helping your team. It's just interesting to me to see this slump coincide with right after we saw something happen to his right hand. And worst case, I don't think it's something that's a major issue. The Rockets are not stupid. We have seen this over and over again this year. They have taken a very cautious view, especially with the depth that they have right now. If there's any sort of injury at all, even minor, and certainly to your stars like Chris Paul and James Harden, they are going to err on the conservative side. We saw that earlier this year when they held Chris Paul out for over a month, what amounted to just a run-of-the-mill bone bruise for bumping knees. They get the big picture, so certainly I don't think they're letting him play with an injury that could cause any sort of significant damage down the line. I'm just saying it would not floor me if, should this continue, if maybe we hear that it's bothering him a little bit more, and then maybe you give him a couple extra days to rest it. I'm nowhere near that right now. If I had to bet, I would just say it's kind of a flukish sample size issue, and he'll probably play well on Saturday night against the Celtics, especially getting a couple days off to rest, because at 32 years old, I would say stretches in which you have 4 games and 6 nights, 3 and 4 are all on the road, they probably take a little bit of an extra toll on guys like Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, Joe Johnson, your guys that are in their 30s and have a lot of mileage. That's probably what's going on here. I just mentioned the hand thing. It's kind of just keep it in the back of your mind. I'm not anticipating it to come up. I'm just saying it's interesting that you see these four sluggish games right after that. And now, not right after that in terms of days, because there was the 9 days off over the All-Star break, right after that in terms of the next four games played. So just keep it in the back of your mind. Hopefully we never have to discuss it again. It's just something that crossed my mind, seeing him struggle through another night from behind the arc, as we mentioned, 19% on 4 of 21 shooting on threes since the All-Star break. But what's most important, of course, the Rockets got the win, 105-92. And as we close out the program, what I want to discuss, we mentioned the value of the win earlier. The Rockets now 48-13, winners of 14 in a row. They responded after what happened January 15th, the secret tunnels, all the post-game fun with Trevor Ariza, Gerald Green, allegedly Chris Paul and James Harden. And this game was weird in that they got out to that 31-7 and a 39-12 start and then kind of coasted the rest of the way. Maybe the legs were tired. I had to lean a little bit extra on Clint Capella and Eric Gordon, your two bodies who were not out there Monday night in Utah. And while the win is big in and of itself, What's interesting to me in the bigger picture, looking at this win, was the clear extra gear the Rockets had early in that game on both ends of the court when they were playing essentially for the revenge angle to make up for what happened in January. And the reason that intrigues me, you hear all the time stuff about bullet board material. You hear it in the context of all these quotes the Rockets say about their confidence, even against the Warriors, how James Harden thinks it's his year. And you hear so much talk about how, well, why do you want to poke the bear? Because Golden State has so much talent, and I usually roll my eyes at that because the idea that Golden State would not be 100% locked in the playoffs anyway is a little silly. If they're not giving everything they have, regardless of what's said or isn't said and what may be on their bulletin board, then there's other problems. So I usually roll my eyes. But it's not just about the playoffs. It is about the regular season, because if the Rockets can hold off the Warriors for the number one seed, then it gives you a much better shot to take 4-7 when Game 2, Game 1, Game 5, and Game 7 are all in your gym at Toyota Center in Houston. So I do think there are occasional games where you can use that extra kick in the pants to get going. And we talk about it a lot in the context of the Warriors. But why don't we think about this in the context of the Rockets as well? Because the first quarter of this game in Staples Center against a Clippers team that entered playing very well, again, coming off a big win in Denver in which they overcame an 18-point deficit late in the third quarter. The Clippers are a quality team. And the Rockets made them look ridiculous. The Rockets got off to a 31-7 start, 39-12. They were thoroughly dominant on both ends of the court. And what, for the first 10 to 12 minutes, all I could think of was, wow, don't make the Rockets mad. Because they came out with a point to prove, and boy, did they. And I know ultimately it got a little closer than you would like, because I think the vibe gets very weird when you get off to a 39-12 start, especially with the Wesley Johnson play. And the Clips kind of sort of got back in the game, but not really, and the Rockets ended up winning very comfortably. But what it made me think about was, we talk so much about the Warriors and bullet board material. Folks, that applies to the Rockets as well. The Rockets are not just some little engine that could. Led by Chris Paul and James Harden, there is incredible top-end talent. Clint Capella, 22-14. Eric Gordon, 22 points and 28 minutes off the bench. They reminded you Wednesday that they are star-level talent as well. The Rockets are a great team, not just because of the chemistry, although it's good, not just because of how they play together, but because of the talent. And can bulletin board material mean something over 82 games when players and teams inevitably have certain moments that they might otherwise not be fully focused? Yeah, it can. But it's not like the Warriors are the only team that applies to. The Rockets gave you a reminder Wednesday night that their A game, it's really damn dominant too, even on the road against a very possible Western Conference playoff team. And in terms of translating to the playoffs, I don't necessarily buy the angle of bulletin board material, because as I said, for the Rockets, the Warriors, if either of these teams is not 100% dialed in already, regardless of what's said or isn't said, there's a deeper problem. But I do buy into the concept of how good is each team's A game. We've seen it from time to time when the Warriors go on these runs in which they just look filthy, ridiculous, to where you can't even imagine how the other team could remotely stay in striking distance. Well, folks, the first 12 minutes of that game against the Clippers, I'm sure, again, the extra incentive, the Rockets probably treated it like a playoff game, at least at the start, based on what happened in January, the secret tunnel, all that sort of stuff. But in terms of translating to the playoffs, the first 10 to 12 minutes of that game on Wednesday night was a hell of a reminder that the Rockets' A game, the Rockets, when they are dialed in, they can be every bit as scary as the Warriors. It's not just a little team that could. Now, they do have good chemistry. I'm not meaning to say that they don't. But beyond chemistry, the sheer talent is really damn good too. And we saw that early in the game. When the Rockets are dialed in on defense, when James Harden is attacking the rim offensively and willing to probe, and when I say willing to probe, it's not even so much that he has to take an inside shot. Look at the move they put on Wesley Johnson, sending Wesley to the floor. Folks, that culminated with a James Harden three. It was just the willingness to drive that got Wesley out of sorts. And so when I say willingness pro, it's not just Harden having to take a shot inside the arc. It's the willingness to, so the defense has to respect that, and many times, sometimes he's going to get to the rim, sometimes he'll pull back and get a wide open three. It just depends. But larger picture, the point is that the Rockets' A game, it's really, really good too. The Warriors are not the only team, and a lot of the framework, in my opinion, you see around the league, people make it seem like that, well, you better hope that the Warriors aren't taking it seriously, because when the Warriors play their best, nobody can hang with them. Well, folks, when the Rockets play their best, it's hard to see very many teams hanging with them as well. The Rockets' A game can be just as filthy as the Warriors, and that, above everything else, was my takeaway from Wednesday night's game. Yes, we didn't say it for 48 minutes, but the vibe got weird. Also, 4 games in 6 nights, 3-4. I don't think it was reasonable to say it for 48 minutes. But that 39-12 start, boy, that was fascinating. And in my opinion, very encouraging to see from the Rockets, both from the standpoint of staying engaged over the final 21 games of the year to get that number one seed, but also a good reminder of just what that A game is for the Rockets. It's not even like they played all that great. As we mentioned, Chris Paul, 3 of 12, 8 points. So they could have been even better. But the Rockets, to start this game, boy, tip your hat. And every time you hear national analysts kind of frame the Warriors-Rockets as well, when it gets to the playoffs and the Warriors try hard, remind them of this game. Because, folks, the Rockets have another gear, too. So with that, I will wrap up. As always, thanks to you guys for tuning in to me here at Locked On Rockets. If you want more regular coverage, best place to get that is on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Also, don't forget our website, LockedOnRockets.com. Facebook, which is at Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Or our email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. That's where you can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, or inquire about how to become a potential advertiser of this rapidly growing program, thanks to awesome listeners like you guys. So until the weekend, I will sign off. Once again, the very happy final from Staples Center. Rockets get their revenge. 105-92 winners over the Clippers. Rockets now 48-13 on the year, 14 consecutive wins. Clippers fall to 32-28. So until Saturday night, when the Rockets will have another potential revenge game, that's the second meeting with the Celtics, potential NBA Finals preview. We all know what happened in the first game when the Rockets blew that 24-point lead. All the controversial officiating when the NBA acknowledged 6 blown calls in the final minute, all favoring the Celtics. Well, the Rockets, they got their revenge game on the Clippers, got a chance for their revenge game on the Celtics on Saturday night at Toyota Center in Houston. Nationally, you can see it as the ABC primetime game, so no excuse not to watch it. And if you're in Houston, hope to see many of you guys out at Toyota Center. Should be a very fun environment for what, as I said, could very well be an NBA Finals preview. Until then, folks, enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll be talking again very soon right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.